Tuesday morning, America. It's time for Freedom Frenzy. It's January 25th, 2011. We're sneaking up on 2012, you know, and we're also sneaking up on the end of the year, and we're sneaking up on that long, hot summer. I've promised you, lays just ahead. My name is Jerry DeMars, and I'll be joined in just a moment, rumor has it, by Jenny Hodges.
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were experiencing some technical difficulties on your end there.
And, it always makes the beginning of the show interesting.
Yeah, it could help. So what's going on at the Hodges household since you're saddling up to come to Georgia?
Oh, yes, we are in a frenzied state of activity. Because John left town. He's out of town on a business trip. And so, they're having to clean and scrub. And we got to pack our schoolwork and our musical instruments and our music books and yada, yada, yada. And
God, babe, you need a trailer to pull behind that new Suburban of yours.
I have been strategizing on how to fit it all in. And, of course, I've been winding down my kefir grains and my yogurt and buttermilk cultures and all this, putting it into the dormant, icy, cold state so I can transport it safely to Georgia.
So you're hauling your cultures too, huh?
Oh, yes, and my wheat mill and a bucket of wheat. I will not be feeding my family poisonous food.
Where are you keeping the camels, dear?
That is a good question, Jerry. My sister recently put up a new barn. Not even going to be a problem.
Okay. So you got that mobile yurt that you've always been desirous of, and you're going to throw it up somewhere here in Georgia, and actually, from all appearances, retake up housekeeping here in Georgia.
Yes. Oliver asked me yesterday. He goes, Mom, are we packing the whole house?
I kind of got that impression in the short conversation that we've had here, dear.
No.
Wow. Yeah, well, they say women don't travel light, but you're an exception even to that, aren't you?
Well, I have a half dozen kids and homeschooling and music lessons. We can't afford for everybody to just slack off for 2+ weeks, maybe 3 weeks. So we just got to bring our housekeeping with us.
And you're going to find time to do all that?
Well, we have a very
low... You have good intentions. That's what you're saying.
Well, we always have time for the music lessons. And in fact, when Charles had to go to the emergency room the other day for stitches, the doctor said, so where do you go to school? And he goes, well, I'm homeschooled. So basically that means we clean house all day and do music for hours. And I was like... Oh.
So it's Jenny's janitorial academy. Is that what the kids are telling them?
Exactly. Janitorial and music academy. So every day, I made him do a bunch of extra math. I was like, Charles, just to make you feel loved and educated, let's get out the math book.
Is that a sore subject?
My children feel that I am a mediocre mother, really not that good, and, They look at me with jaundiced eyes. But hey, when I kick them out at 18, they'll know how to teach music and be in an orchestra. So
and mop floors, apparently.
Mop floors.
Okay, well, I got to ask you then, are you teaching any of them to cook too?
All right, I have a confession to make. I don't have the patience to teach them how to cook. And if they are cooking an egg or something, like Jonathan and Caroline will attempt this, I have to leave the kitchen. Otherwise, I will take over and throw them out.
Okay.
Really, I'm not a very...
You got to do better than that. I was the oldest in my family, and I could cook when I got married. And my wife, Elaine, was the youngest in hers, the baby. And I had to teach her to cook. And during that experimental phase, after we shortly after we got married... Gosh, she made me sick, and I miss so much work because of her experimental meals. that it wasn't funny. But I finally, when she cooked me some chicken livers and she dipped them in powdered sugar, I knew it was time to step in. Hey, we're going to be right back. And, you know, we're going to do Hit and Run News when we do come back. So don't go.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information, 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Micro plant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, micro plant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
And let's kick up a fuss here, an economic fuss, because it's time for Hit and Run News. And I want you to think about something here, dear. Because of what we know is going on in the economy today, are we actually ringside witnesses to the most predictable financial calamity in mankind's history? And the reason I say that, we'd have to go all the way back to November of 2010 when the Federal Reserve announced a second round of economic stimulus, commonly referred to as quantitative easing. And this one was quantitative easing 2 or QE2. The reason for this work by the Fed was progress toward its objectives had been disappointingly slow. So, to try to turn the economy around, the Fed said it intended to purchase a further $600 billion worth of longer-term Treasury securities by the end of the second quarter, that's June, of this year, a pace of approximately $75 billion per month. QE means that the Fed basically creates money out of thin air to buy debt. The current money printing orgy is financing more than half of the United States government's daily expenses right now. The first round of QE, as you probably might remember, bought toxic mortgage debt and bailed out the bankers. What was not said in that press release, however, was that, and it was very important, and it may go down as one of the biggest turning points in the history of America, it brought on, by bringing on, rather, QE2, it meant that QE1, which amounted to $1.75 trillion, had failed to provide a sustained recovery. It also exposed the $12.3 trillion total spent or loaned by the Fed since the meltdown of 2008 failed to give the economy anything like a lasting boost. The Fed did save some businesses, of course, and all the big Wall Street banks, well, most of them, those that weren't allowed to go under, but they saved those fellows from bankruptcy. But now we know nothing has really been fixed. So we ought to be asking ourselves, what happens when QE2 comes to an end? John Williams of ShadowStats.com predicts a financial meltdown even if QE2 is extended. He stated, "I think that you will see much greater economic and systemic solvency troubles ahead than commonly are expected. Accordingly, I would expect that a QE3 or an expansion of QE2 before it is scheduled to have been run through." Rick Ackerman, professional trader and founder of the website and newsletter called Rick's Picks, says, "I don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell that promiscuous easing will end, regardless of what the fraudulent successor to QE2 might be called. The U.S. bailout of cities and states could become politically necessary as early as this year, although a decision to do so would trigger the worst run on the dollar in history. Look for the bailout to happen anyway, but in a way that tries to obscure the fact that it is being done with funny money. That subterfuge won't work for long, since public workers will figure out pretty quickly that unless their retirement benefits are indexed to inflation, they're going to get paid in confetti." World-renowned gold expert Jim Sinclair said that states and municipalities can and will go broke. The economic impact will act to foil quantitative easing. That will result in QE to infinity regardless of MOPE. And in case you've never heard that acronym, it stands for Management of Perception Economics, which is a big thing in Washington and at the Fed this time around. Therefore, Washington and the Fed will backdoor rescues by buying state and municipal debt, a different form of QE. James Rickards is a heavyweight in the world of finance. What happens when QE2 ends, he says? The Fed never said that QE2 would end. That's a popular misconception, but they never said it. What they said was that they would buy $600 billion worth of intermediate-term Treasury securities by June 2011. They never said that that was all they would buy. They never said that they would stop. The comments were carefully worded so that $600 billion by June was a targeted minimum, but they never said anything about a maximum. Technically, there is no maximum. The first QE program ended in 2010, and the economy immediately began to fall into a double dip. QE2 was hastily put together to truncate the double dip. If they end QE2, the double dip scenario is back on the table. Therefore, it will not end. They will keep monetizing debt, whatever it takes, as long as it takes, until there is a self-sustaining recovery. However, none of the predicates of self-sustaining recovery are in place. Therefore, they will just keep printing money as far as the eye can see until the process becomes dynamically unstable and the dollar begins to collapse. So, bottom line, it is a mistake to talk about the end of QE2 because there is no end in sight. In summary, all the experts question QE2. They think that they will not end that program of kiting bad checks, in essence. That will surely mean an imploding U.S. dollar and exploding inflation. This is actually scheduled to happen by the end of June, making this the most predictable financial calamity in the history of man. Back to you, dear.
Wow. Oh, well, I've got more good news, Jerry. Because drug companies have come out saying they're scaling back research funding to find new drugs, chiefly probably because they're broke. Ha ha. Well, in response to that, Uncle Sam has decided to open a drug research center, which will operate under the National Institutes of Health and be called the National Center for Advancing Translational Sciences. Of course, the research that this drug research center will do will immediately be handed into the hands of pharmaceutical corporations, and they will sell drugs based upon that research for a profit. Probably back to the government through Medicaid and Medicare. The director of this of the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Francis Collins, is hoping that Congress will increase funding of the center to at least $1 billion annually. And I don't know what they're currently being funded at. And this isn't the National Institutes of Health that's being funded for $1 billion annually. It's the National Center for Advancing Translational Sciences. The NIH, of course, is a revolving door for big pharma executives. Dr. William Potter, for example, was formerly a researcher at the National Institute of Mental Health, after which he became the vice president of translational neuroscience at Merck. And the government money that goes into these so-called drug discoveries will only end up boosting the profits of drug companies rather than fundamentally improving the health of the American people. Quite frankly, if we stopped research on drugs and stopped prescribing drugs, the American people would probably get healthier sooner.
Some would, undoubtedly. Some would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's all I've got on that. That's it. The government's getting into the pharmacy business.
Well, I guess you maybe heard a little bit about this story. Former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura has filed a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security and the Transportation Security Administration as of yesterday, alleging full body scans and pat downs at airport checkpoints violate his right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. Now, before I go on here, I want you to listen closely to the aspect that Jesse Ventura is taking here. And it's not exactly what you might think on the outset. And I want you to tell me, dear, what you think of Mr. Ventura's lawsuit when we get done. Ventura is asking a federal judge in Minnesota to issue an injunction ordering officials to stop subjecting him to warrantless and suspicionless scans and body searches. The lawsuit, which also names Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano and TSA Administrator John Pistole as defendants, argues that the searches are unwarranted and unreasonable intrusions on Governor Ventura's personal privacy and dignity, and are justifiable cause for him to be concerned for his personal health and well-being. According to the lawsuit, Ventura received a hip replacement back in 2008, and since then, his titanium implant has set off metal detectors at airport security checkpoints. The lawsuit said that prior to last November, officials had used a non-invasive handheld wand to scan his body as a secondary security measure. But when Ventura set off the metal detector in November, he was instead subjected to a body pat-down and was not given the option of a scan with a handheld wand or an exemption for being a frequent flyer, the lawsuit said. The lawsuit added that the pat-down exposed him to humiliation, degradation, and unwanted touching, gripping, and rubbing of intimate areas of his body. It claims that under TSA policy, Ventura will be required to either go through a full body scanner or submit to a pat down every time he travels, because he will always set off the metal detector. So what do you think?
I think more power to him. I think the more attention that can be raised on
But is this all about Jesse? Do you think this is all about Jesse, or do you think he's trying to strike a blow for liberty?
I don't know. You want me to sit here and judge his heart? I don't know, Jerry. I have no idea. I would imagine that he has great umbrage at what TSA is doing to the American people, and he just figured, well, you know what? This is a way for me to make a stab at it, at the beast. So I would give him the benefit of the doubt that is he's liberty-minded.
Okay. Well, if you're going to let him skate on that, I'll go with you, at least till we see how it pans out. I got the idea that it was kind of a selfish thing, but we'll see what happens. Hey, folks, we're going to take a break here in just a moment. And remember, Tom Woods is going to be with us the bottom of this first half hour. So make sure that you tell everybody you know and hang on till the rest of the program plays out today. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried?
Hey, welcome back to Freedom Frenzy. I had a story here, Jerry, that I think is a very interesting piece, because I always contend that in America, under the Republicans, the handouts are just going to the wealthy, and it is just a bloodletting of the American people to enrich the rich. That's the bottom line. And when the Democrats... Yeah. Go ahead.
You're going to have to define handout.
Well, a handout to me is basically what JP Morgan is getting, it as revealed in the story. This story
so
is
food
from,
stamp food stamps by themselves, they're not a handout.
Well, of course food stamps are a handout. Okay. But the people that food stamps enrich the most, I would contend that JP Morgan is making a heck of a lot of money off of food stamps. And the amount of food that we throw away in this country is shocking and criminal under all sorts of government regulations. So really, there's no reason to be using food stamps. There's plenty of food in America. JP Morgan is the largest processor of food stamp benefits in the United States. Morgan has contracted to provide food stamp debit cards in 26 U.S. states in the District of Columbia, and is paid for each case that it handles. So that means that the more Americans that go on food stamps, the more profits JP Morgan makes. This is insane. There's a video that was posted on the economiccollapseblog.com where JP Morgan executive Christopher Patton admits that this is a very important business to JP Morgan and that it is doing very well. Considering the fact that the number of Americans on food stamps has exploded from 26 million in 2007 to 43 million today, one can only imagine how much JP Morgan's profits in this area have soared. But doesn't this give JP Morgan an incentive to keep the number of Americans enrolled in the food stamp program as high as possible? And the other thing about this, Jerry, is that if you call call the service line for food stamps, they have hired people in India to take those phone calls. So they're getting this contract to do the food stamp program. And additionally, they're making money off of it, a lot of money. And additionally, they're not even hiring Americans to do the labor involved in providing the quote-unquote service. JP Morgan also provides child support debit cards in 15 U.S. states, and they also provide unemployment insurance benefit debit cards in 7 states. Apparently, states have found that they can save millions of dollars by outsourcing the provision of these benefits to big financial firms like JP Morgan. So what happens if you have a problem with your food stamp debit card? You call a JP Morgan service center, which will be answered by an employee in India.
That's wild. What states have actually gone to this process, dear?
Let's see. This article does not list the particular states, but I'm sure with some cross-referencing, it could be easily discovered. It is a lot of states. What is it, 29 states? So I would imagine that, and I thought the food stamp program was more federal.
Well, let me ask you a question. Should we, the American people, be upset when we have a problem, we call the 1-800 you're in trouble number, and somebody from somewhere across the other side of the planet answers the phone and you know, I have dealt with these people on the telephone in times past, and they want to follow a script, and as soon as you try to get them away from that script, the conversation just gets bizarre, and I always end up very, very frustrated and I don't think in my entire life in any of those experiences have I ever come to a successful close of a matter dealing with some of these outsourced service centers in the Philippines or in India. And I've actually talked to somebody that was working for Microsoft that was in Pakistan. Now, whether he's the tech guy that you see, there was a little picture that was floating around the internet a couple of years ago about a guy on a bicycle producing power so he could run his own laptop. And he was the Microsoft tech guy that answered your questions when you had to call Microsoft. I don't know if that was exactly right, but I certainly had that impression when I was talking with him. It's wild.
Yep.
But should we, the American people, should we get upset when we hear somebody on the phone that's definitely, in many ways, not from around here?
Well, my attitude is that if that bothers you, if you think there's a huge problem there with these American companies outsourcing answering the phone to foreign countries, you need to call the company and let them know that you're very mad about it, and then you need to cease to do any business with that company.
Oh, there's something else that you can do, dear. If you can't get any resolution out of the person that's somewhere else, you can ask to speak to an American. And, you know, this is actually also heavily involved in the current mortgage debacle that everybody's facing now, too. I've actually talked to people that their problem resolution center was in India, and the guy stuck to his script, and they were going to repossess this person's home. And he said, I want to talk to an American. And he was quickly connected with an American. And when he got talking with an American, the entire scenario changed. And all of a sudden, hey, we're willing to work with you. But the guy in India was, hey, we're going to take your house. You need to go get you some cardboard boxes because we're coming over there to get your house. Hey, folks, we're going to cut away to a break. And hopefully when we come back, Mr. Woods will be with us. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each mill is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generation.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
All right, comrades, we're back. And as promised, we have Dr. Thomas E. Woods, Jr. With us today. And Dr. Woods is a senior fellow with the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And he's got more paper on the wall than you can shake a stick at. So without any further ado, let's bring Tom on board. Good morning, Dr. Woods.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I appreciate you being here with us. You know, Tom, and I'm just going to launch into this because we don't have a whole lot of time. To be quite honest, your affiliation with the Mises Institute had me thinking, for some reason or another, that you were an economist by training. Yet when I read your bio, I find that instead you're a historian. How did you fall in with the Mises Institute and become a senior fellow?
Well, they are a very broad-minded, big tent kind of crowd over there. We're very interdisciplinary. We got philosophers, we got political scientists, we got economists, but we all look at the world through a similar lens. We've got certain it's a certain approach to studying the past, studying the present, that's shared by all of us in all these different professions. And also, I'm very interested. I've been studying economics sort of as a hobby, you might say, for close to 20 years now, I guess. So. So I've been writing a lot about it. In fact, Henry Hazlitt, not that I'm in any way comparing myself to him, but he wrote a book called Economics in One Lesson about 50 years ago, and that book has sold literally millions of copies. Mm-hmm. Hazlitt had only a high school diploma. He had no college degree in any field, and yet his work in economics was absolutely out of this world good. So they are generous enough to let a guy like me, you know, who just does this as, you know, other people play chess or they collect stamps or something. I study economics.
Oh, okay. So how did you find yourself being involved with the folks at Mises then? Did they come to you? Or
oh, well, I mean, I went as an undergraduate about 17 years ago, 18 years ago. I attended their summer program. They have a week-long summer program to give you a crash course in economics. And I went, and from that moment on, I was hooked. And then I, as a graduate student, I spent a summer at the Mises Institute. And then as time went on and they, you know, they were beginning to have at least a few faculty members on site, and it looked like there was a historian opening, I immediately wrote, said, I wouldn't mind grabbing that if you wanted to have me. So right now we live actually in Topeka, Kansas. We've recently relocated, but I spent 4 years as a resident scholar at the Institute, and I'll be spending all my summers there from now until the day of my death.
Mm-hmm. Well,
wow, that's a serious commitment, Tom.
Yeah, that sure is. In fact, they made me sign that in blood.
Neat. And did you get your wife's approval beforehand?
We have friends in Alabama. We enjoy being there. And of course, every sane person leaves Alabama for the summer because it's 150 degrees there every day. We're actually going there for the summer.
You know, most people don't notice the temperature, Tom. They notice the humidity.
Well, we got them both in spades.
Well, let me take you back to Atlanta. It's January 2010. We're at the Sheraton in Atlanta right after the conclusion of the Campaign for Liberty Regional Conference. Do you remember that, Tom?
I sure do.
Okay, well, a number of us were thinking that we might be best served by locating another standard bearer for the Freedom or Patriot movement in light of, quite frankly, Dr. Paul's advancing age. As you probably recall, we called you over to discuss your potential candidacy.
Oh, that was you guys.
Yes, Ginny was there and I was there, but I was actually sitting in kind of in on the roundtable discussion that you came over and kindly addressed.
Yeah.
And you gave us some apologetics as to why you didn't feel as though you would be a good presidential candidate. And we all kind of mulled that over and said, well, you know, Tom's still a bright guy. He still would be a marvelous president. And, you know, I still think that, Tom. But I can't help, and I'm judging from the apologetics that you offered that evening, that video that you produced where you're being interviewed by a zombie. You know which one I'm talking about, right?
I do, although I feel like I've been interviewed by quite a few zombies. I know the specific one you mean.
Show enough.
Well, this particular zombie representing, I suspect, the controlled media, where the zombie, I guess, preemptively tried to attach labels to you that you had told us about as part of your rationale for not being a good presidential candidate. Did you, by any chance at all, and I'm kind of digging at you here, Tom, did you produce that video as a way to offset, maybe even preemptively on your part, some of the commentary that might be coming out if we had been successful in trying to get you to run?
Well, when I did that, first of all, just I don't want to assume all your listeners know of this video, so let me just throw out an easy way to get to it. You go on the internet, you go to interviewwithazombie.com. Can you believe I purchased that domain name, interviewwithazombie.com? You'll be able to go right to that video and see what you think of it. Well, when I made that, I had a more short-term goal in mind. I had a book coming out called Nullification. And it's, you know, of course, as I'm sure your listeners know, it's about the idea that Jefferson proposed that the states have to be able to defend themselves against unconstitutional federal laws. And if that means just simply refusing to enforce them, then so be it. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, when you promote an idea like this, you know, your motives are going to be questioned. It's going to be assumed you want to oppress people. You probably want to bring back slavery. I mean, this is, as you know, this is about the level of discussion, if you can even call it that, that you're going to get in mainstream outlets. So I thought, look, I'm not just going to sit here as a sitting duck waiting for them to pull this trick on me. I'm going to laugh at them before they have a chance to do it. And so that every time they try to do it, whether it's on a blog or wherever, people who like what I'm doing can just simply, without even commenting, just in the comment section, post the link to this video, which I think says it all. So that was, I was just thinking in terms of, I've got this book coming out, and indeed I have taken attacks of precisely this nature, and mm-hmm. the video has served me very well, because now anytime somebody does attack me on these grounds and claims that, you know, I support slavery, or, you know, they use the word neo-Confederate and all this, immediately all my supporters just immediately say, zombie! Zombie all over the comments. Zombie, the poor guy doesn't know what hit him.
Well, that was a masterstroke, Tom.
Well,
it really
thank
was.
You.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Well, interestingly, by the way, if you have seen the video, nevertheless, go to interviewwithazombie.com anyway, because I've also posted the blooper reel, which actually turns out to be 100 times funnier than the actual video, because like the first few times we did this, I could not get through it with a straight face. Sitting here like a zombie. I mean, it was just perfect. Just the bloopers are better than the real thing.
Well, let's get to your book, Tom. You know, and I'll tell you up front, I've not read it, but I have read Meltdown, the free market look at why the stock market collapsed and the economy tanked, and government bailouts will make things worse. And I thought that that was a wonderful primer to put in the hands of the economically unaware that they could easily wrap their minds around. And I'm hoping that there's a paperback edition coming out soon that will enable people to buy that reasonably priced so that they can distribute it en masse. And I've also read, go ahead.
I mean, of course, you know, it is available in the, you can find it in the used market, I'm sure, in addition to buying it new hardcover right now. But my understanding is the publisher's plan is for later this year, I don't know exactly what month, but later this year there should be indeed a paperback follow-up for that. And then also on February 7th, if everybody's keeping track of all this, I have a book coming out called, I hate the title, but nothing I can do about it, called Rollback, and the subtitle is, which I also hate, Repealing Big Government Before the Coming Fiscal Collapse.
So now, that's why do you hate, how is ambitious. It that the author can hate the title?
Well, it's because we couldn't agree, well, the problem is we couldn't agree on one, and I am the worst title generator in the world. So, you know, they would say to me, alright, fine, you got anything better? I'd have to stand there. Well, no.
That's awesome.
we could just wrap the book in brown paper bag and just hand it to people with no title. I don't know. I have no title suggestion. Well, I think mine was something. My subtitle was something like "Crushing Big Government Before It Crushes Us" or something. I think they thought that was a little over the top.
I love it. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Thanks.
Another one of your works that I have digested is The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. Now, I do have some critical commentary on that book, Tom. You had a wonderful opportunity to hoist Franklin Delano Roosevelt on his own petard, and I think you let that opportunity slip through your fingers.
You mean, on the New Deal, I think I hit him pretty hard, and then on World War II, just talking about how he was, I think, not altogether truthful over the course of 1941, but are you talking about Pearl Harbor in particular?
Well, Pearl Harbor and the fact that he had communists in his administration, Alger Hiss and Curry Laughlin, for instance.
Good heavens, he seemed to have erected some of the pillars of communism in his administration. Roosevelt enough.
I did. There is a chapter in that book called Yes, Communist Sympathizers Really Existed. Because I remember when I was going through college and grad school, it was just taken for granted by all my colleagues that anybody who thought that there had been some sort of communist penetration of the government was some kind of crank or whatever, deluded. But I mean, we've got about as much evidence as you could possibly ask for. But on the Pearl Harbor thing in particular, I did actually consider writing about that, and I was even told by the publisher, believe it or not, they specifically said, if you want to basically take the Pearl Harbor revisionist line, we have no editorial problem with that, which is very rare for a publisher to say. So mm-hmm. when I started to look into that, it's like the Kennedy assassination. You've got to read like a billion books in order to even be entitled to an opinion on it. And as I dug through, what I finally did was I wrote to Bettina Graves, because her late husband, Percy Graves, was one of the first people to, I can't remember the name of the book he wrote, but he wrote one of the early books alleging precisely this against FDR, that he had had knowledge of this, hadn't informed people, he wanted it to take place as a way to get the U.S. into the war. So I wrote to her, and she has intimate knowledge of all the sources, and I said, in your opinion, is there an absolute ironclad, 100% smoking gun piece of evidence that just absolutely settles it definitively once and for all? I said, because if only if it's that do I want to say it. And even she, I couldn't quite get that out of her. And I thought, well, given that I don't have time to master the literature and I can't get a definitive answer from the person I consider to be one of the great experts on it, I'm just going to hold back. So, I mean, maybe that was if I'd had more time, maybe I could have dug up some more information, but I thought that that was the only responsible course I could take.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes when you are a real historian, it kills you to put out something that you haven't so adequately researched that nobody can spring a surprise nugget that, you know, undermines your presented arguments. So I think you made the right decision.
Well, thank you.
We enjoyed your unpolitical guide to history in our homeschool. I have 6 children, and we loved that book. It was our back-of-the-toilet book for quite some time. I'm sure you'll be thrilled to know.
Well, I appreciate it. It means it could be read in small doses, and you can still retain the gist of the argument.
Exactly.
Well, Jenny's goal in life is to write a back-of-the-toilet book for general edification of the populace.
That's right. Let's
move on to the book that's out now, Tom, Nullification, How to Resist Federal Tyranny in the 21st Century. Now, please remember that I said that I've not read that, but I was wondering, do you address the issue of getting the individual states up to the point to where they are actually willing to let go of the federal teat in order to tell FedGov to take a hike?
Well, that is, in a way, the federal government at this point kind of has the states right where it wants them, right? I mean, it precisely because it's got them in this situation where they're dependent on this funding, so-called. But on the other hand, I mean, we should remember that in the same way that there are some states that get more than they give up in terms of federal funding, there are other states that are net losers on this. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones I think you might be able to appeal to more. But the point that I make for right now is, you know, yes, of course we need a complete revolution in people's expectations of the federal government. I mean, no dispute there. But frankly, I'm too impatient to wait for that revolution to take place in their minds. So the shorter run semi-solution to this problem is simply to urge nullification so widely among so many states that it would simply be impractical for the federal government to try to intimidate them by threatening the so-called federal funds. I mean, if 25 states are nullifying something, it would be inconceivable that the federal government would be able to punish them all. So that's the sort of tack I'm taking for now. Then in rollback, then I'm talking about, all right, look, people, we've got to stop living in, living on top of Sugar Candy Mountain in our expectations of government, because they can't be met. The promises government has made are about to be broken one by one, and so now we have to adjust our lives accordingly. So that's sort of my follow-up. So you might even think of these last three books in a row with one-word titles, Meltdown, Nullification, and now then Rollback, as maybe being a trilogy that they could be understood together. But you're right. I mean, this is a big problem, but to me, right now, the biggest problem is trying to sell to the public an idea that if they have heard of it at all, they have heard only to be demonized and caricatured. Again, anytime anybody mentions the states, it must be because they want slavery or segregation. This can't be smashed hard enough, and that's really the angle that I'm taking. That's really the portion of the argument that I'm focusing on the most. And let me just point out one other thing. I was just last night on that show Freedom Watch on the Fox Business Network that Judge Napolitano hosts. I was on to talk precisely about this because in Idaho, they're introducing this week a bill to nullify the Obama health law, and the legislators and the governor are specifically citing my book Nullification as the inspiration for this.
Wow.
So that was very nice, but of course that means they're being smeared in the same way that I told you guys in Atlanta that I would be smeared. Oh,
right.
Crazy right-wing hate group neo-Confederate Tom Woods, whatever, is where they're getting their inspiration. So, you know, what they don't say is, and you, I'm not a credential freak, by the way. I don't spend my time boasting. I don't tell people I've got a fancy degree and you don't, so shut your mouth. I don't do that, but when people attack me like this, what I do like to sort of jokingly come back with is, well, you might just as easily have said, instead of saying the Idaho legislators are getting their inspiration from this crazy, evil, you know, allegedly neo-Confederate, you could also have said they're getting their inspiration from a Columbia University PhD who graduated with high honors from Harvard. However, they don't seem to describe me that way, do they?
That is so boring, Tom.
How convenient.
Yeah, that must have just been an oversight, right?
Well, you know, this is a still a fairly murky issue, Tom, and I say that because we've actually seen a little bit of tacit nullification of real ID by some of the states simply saying, we're not going to do that here. And that's kind of a positive thing, but we've had some negative things, and we're going to have to cut away to a commercial break. And when we get back, Tom, I'd like to explore this just a little bit further. Folks, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendovite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendovite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey,
Okay, comrades, we're fortunate enough to have Dr. Tom Woods with us today. And if you would like a little bit more information about some of the other works that Dr. Woods has put out, please feel free to go to www.tomwoods.com. You know, there's a wealth of information there, some freebies. I think you'll have a good time at Dr. Woods' website. Now, Tom, let's get back to this issue of nullification. And as I alluded to before the break, we've seen some plausible nullification insofar as real ID and the fact that a great many states, even in light of the money that they've been offered to change their mind, Georgia not necessarily being one of those, however, have said that they're not going to go along with real ID. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we've had states like Montana, for instance, that have passed a gun act there that has put gun stores and sporting good outlets in kind of a bind, actually, because the state of Montana is telling them one thing, and then the federal agents, BATFE, for instance, are coming in and telling them that in order to stay in business, you're going to have to disregard Montana's state law because we say it's got to go this way. Where do we draw the line, or what can we do to address what, in essence, is manifestations of the Supremacy Clause?
It's true, and certainly it's it's the modern interpretation of the Supremacy Clause that's the problem. I mean, the clause itself, relatively speaking, is not so offensive. It says that the Constitution and laws in pursuance thereof shall be the supreme law of the land, and there are even some people I've encountered in my travels and debates on this subject who actually think that settles the whole question against nullification. But, of course, what the clause means is that the Constitution plus constitutional laws shall be the supreme law of the land. Okay, well, that just begs the question. What happens if you have a law that's not constitutional? So that's what the nullifiers said, is that precisely because these are not constitutional laws, the Supremacy Clause doesn't cover them. Now, you know, try arguing that today to some government goon coming through your door. I admit this is a difficulty, but nevertheless, we have to at least. I mean, as a historian, what my job is to tell people about the original intent, tell people what the country was supposed to look like, what kind of defense mechanisms we were supposed to be entitled to, and then the question of how we can best implement these for today. Well, I've got some ideas, but this is where I want to have recourse to the division of labor intellectually. So my friends at the 10th Amendment Center, for example, like Michael Bolden and a bunch of other people around the country, have helped to come up with suggestions about how exactly to put this stuff into practice. But my mind is still, you know, I still think in a sort of 18th, 19th century way. And so what I can do as a historian is say, here's the raw data. These are facts. There's no getting around them. These are facts. The arguments for nullification are extremely compelling when you actually look at all the information that has fallen down the Orwellian memory hole. When you look at the real constitutional, historical, moral arguments, they are absolutely compelling. But you're right, in terms of current difficulties, I don't always have the right answer. I don't always have an answer. But as this movement grows, we are finding more and more clever people coming up with more and more ingenious ways to take Jefferson's idea and make it relevant to 2011.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let me ask you a question. Since you are a historian, let's go all the way back to Chisholm versus Georgia. Are you familiar with that case?
Yes.
Okay, when did the individual states lose the authority that they had apparently back in, what is it, 1793, if I recall correctly, to gauge the constitutionality of a matter, and today they can't do it. And before you get into that, Tom, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have even have asked you that question because we're hard on a break here, and we do have to break away for a commercial break here. But please give that some thought, and when we come back, I'll get you to answer that question for me. Folks, we'll be right back.
Gold.